different kind of fire. And when the darkness comes, let it inside you. Your darkness is shining, my darkness is shining. Have faith in myself. True. I've seen a million number doors on the horizon. Now which is the future you're choosing before you gon' die? And I'll tell you about a secret I've been undermining. Every little lie in this world come from the divine. Say you're my love, say you're my home. Till my chin back, slit my throat, take a bath in my blood, get to know me. All out of my secrets, all my enemies are turning into my teachers. Speak up, light's blinding, no way dividing. What's yours or mine when everything's shining? Your darkness is shining, my darkness is shining.
This is Academics on Air, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio.
Baby, I could never steal you from another. to Academics on Air with me, Jenna.
And me, Marissa.
This was Purple Rain by Pink. I'm sorry, not Pink. Prince, sorry, getting ready for the next song. And so this week we unfortunately do not have a guest, but if that makes you as sad as it makes us sad, be our next guest. Email us at academicsonair@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. But in the meantime, we're going to be playing some tunes and we'll have some musings of our own. So, yeah.
And we're going into a bit of a theme of economics and...
Also just weather-related things,
weather-related
too. Just whatever's on our mind. So...
Cool.
Yeah. definitely wasn't the right.
Yeah, it's definitely like he was cruising for bruising. Hello.
That was Money from Pink Floyd.
Yeah, and so now I guess I'll be our quote-unquote guest for the time being. Marissa might be a guest later, who knows. but yeah, so I'm going to read from an article, and this article is called Freeing Econ 101, Beyond the Grasp of the Invisible Hand, from a magazine called, or a website, I'm not sure if it's actually published as a magazine, but called Behavioral Scientist. All right, let me just pull it up. Okay. It'd be one thing if Econ 101, and just a parenthetical here, Econ 101 referring to like any like kind of like introductory level economics course, hence the 101 as kind of most intro courses are. So it'd be one thing if Econ 101 simply produced generations of students with misguided beliefs about how society really worked. But there's been a more pernicious aspect to how Econ 101 has traditionally been taught. The stubborn idea that people are not only rational, they are selfish. And not only that they are selfish, but acting selfishly can lead to the best outcome for society. Because in the neoclassical fantasy land of perfect competition, perfect information, no negative spillover effects, and so on, selfishness counteracts selfishness in a way that maximizes the welfare of society. If someone is making an insane profit exploiting people, any person can set up a new firm and bring down the price because there are no entry barriers in the world of perfect competition. The competitive process continues until profit disappears and the price of goods and services reach the cost it takes to produce them, the best possible outcome for consumers. Greed becomes virtue in the neoclassical fantasy land because it's part of the mechanism through which the invisible hand creates its miracles. Then I'm going to skip over a little bit because it gets into kind of like some Adam Smith and like Wealth of Nations, and I don't care that much for political and economic philosophy. But anyway, so for millions of high schoolers and college students, Econ 101 is their one and only time to get an understanding of the discipline, its way of thinking, its vital tools, and its concepts. And yet often they spend an inordinate amount of time exploring a model that is profoundly divorced from reality. It's easy to see how an ugly, money-grubbing view of human nature in a neoclassical fantasy land, they seem to use that term a lot, alien to the world around them might turn off people from learning about or even appreciating insights into the field of economics. The economics that Leibison, who is one of the professors discussed in this article, has come to know and love is not the economics that's traditionally been taught in Econ 101. The economics he loves is rich with data, experiments, and openness to the ideas from fields like psychology. It's an economics that is innovative, exciting, and fun, and that equips students with a critical lens to view the world. A few years ago, Leibison came to the realization that many students do not get this view of economics in introductory courses. And I thought, I want to fix this, he says. I want to write a book that helps people realize what economics feels like. So, yeah.
Cool. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm realizing that I think many of my courses at Tufts have discussed economics relatively in a putting down capitalism type way. Yet I haven't had any classical training in it. So it's interesting to hear that.
Yeah. I would say actually most of my courses fall under the typical kind of like Econ 101 drudgery type, the Econ classes I've taken. With the exception of the behavioral economics class, because what this article is basically making a case for is kind of like more contemporary ideas and kind of innovations in the field, which would be like, you know, using empirical methods of investigation rather than just like, you know, working with, I don't know, existing data sets, kind of like making your own through experiments in terms of integrating psychology and behavioral economics. Which again draws a lot on psychology, but also kind of other disciplines in the social sciences, like political science, sociology, anthropology. And I think, I don't know, this is a field that's very interesting to me. I couldn't care less about the kind of like the economy, macroeconomic side of econ. That really doesn't interest me. What interests me is like the kind of the human behavior side. And I think in econ, for anyone who's taken like an econ 101, you kind of are led to have these assumptions that people will act in certain ways given certain parameters, and you can just kind of like plug and chug and figure out what the optimal decision that people will choose will make is. But that's not usually true, because people are not rational and they have emotions and things, you know, get in the way. And I think behavioral econ is trying to kind of like account for that more, or just make sense of the nuances that traditional economics has kind of tried to ignore, or at least kind of, I guess, package up nicely.
What do you think about the word selfishness that is put into that article multiple times as it relates to behavioral economics?
I guess what I would think about it is a lot of times it's like selfishness in terms of like maximizing profit, or, you know, insert whatever word there for yourself, like, oh, I'm gonna do what's gonna give me the most utility or happiness or money. You know, monetary is usually the easiest way to think about it, because I guess it's the most tangible and like easy to kind of conceptualize. It's hard to measure something like happiness, usually we do it through things that are more tangible. We measure something indirect through more direct means.
There is a some alternate to GDP measurement mechanisms, one of which is the the gross national happiness. I think it's not exactly what it's called, but a measurement of happiness.
Yeah, but do you know anything about how they measure that?
I get back to you after a break?
And, all right, we will continue that train of thought afterwards. But going back to, I think, the selfishness thing. It's interesting. I did a research project last semester about using this thing called the ultimatum game. And I could try and give a brief description of it right now. I'm kind of blanking on how to best go about it. It's hard to say without visuals, so maybe I'll just tell people to kind of go look it up. But
you did have a wonderful PowerPoint.
I did, but PowerPoints are visual, so, you know, I'm sorry to our listeners out there. But anyway, that kind of circles around the idea of selfishness and kind of generosity, and just, you know, how are we going to act in certain situations, like when we don't expect people to kind of like, I guess, act towards us in reaction, and like when we are expecting someone to react to us. Does that make sense? So like, you know, just I'm losing my train of thought a little bit. Okay, I'm going to come back to that. I'm sorry, I'm lacking the words to kind of verbalize that. But just, I think about behavioral economics in general, what I think is cool is it's a lot of kind of like trying to fill the gap between econ and psych, or bridge the gap rather. And there's a lot of cool stuff I think that's come out of it so far. Richard Thaler, he won a Nobel Prize in economics for his work in behavioral econ, and he does a lot of stuff about nudges, which is kind of like trying to get people, usually kind of like large groups of people, not just like individuals, to kind of shape their behavior in a more positive direction. For example, I would say, I think most states in the United States, the organ donor registry is an opt-in system. It's something you kind of have to elect to join. And so that means you probably, at the DMV, you have to, like, you know, check a box when you go. But would really be more efficient system in terms of getting people to join
registries, which I think are woefully in need of more people, is an opt-out system, whereas in that case, everyone would be kind of like automatically enrolled. And if you wanted to, you know, be taken off the list, you just need to kind of check a box or something. And they would get a lot more people that way, not because I wouldn't call it deceiving people, but it's just like people are lazy and I think they're going to do whatever's easiest for them. I mean, the people who are really passionately against that, obviously they still have the choice to opt out. It's just, it's kind of taking, it's like doing the work for people who don't want to make the extra effort. And I think some states, I believe Oregon is one of the states that has implemented it. And they have a much higher percentage of people on the registry. And I think some countries may have done it as well. But I think it's something that could use more widespread implementation. And there's lots of other examples of nudges, but that's just the first one that comes to mind right now.
Yeah, and I know I've heard of other cases in which opt-out, or like kind of that reversal of opt-in versus opt-out really might be societally more productive, and yet we have it the other way around. Can we go to a song and then come back to talking?
Sounds good. Okay. What do we have queued up?
Some Hall & Oates.
Okay, perfect.
Cause you know it don't matter anyway. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far. Cause you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far. Get you too far.
Sorry. I was looking for a certain PSA right at the end of Jenna's last comment about opt-in or opt-out for organ donations, and I found it. So here we go. Here's the organ donation public service announcement. There are many social networking websites, but one stands apart for a very special reason. It saves lives. It's matchingdonors.com. Matchingdonors.com links organ donors with people in need of kidney and other transplants. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. If you've ever considered becoming a living organ donor, or if you are someone in need of an organ transplant, visit matchingdonors.com, home of the greatest gift of all, the gift of life. This has been a public service message from matchingdonors.com and WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Yeah, and I think
I don't know, I was doing a little bit more research about the organ donations after our talking, and so what, according to, what is this, the Stanford Social Psychology Answers to Real World Questions website, or SPARC for short, they found that in opt-out countries, so where you have to explicitly opt out of organ donation versus opting in, more than 90% of people donate their organs, whereas in opt-in countries such as the United States, fewer than 15% of people donate their organs at death. Hmm. So I think this is, I don't know, one problem that could maybe kind of, I don't want to say be solved, but more remedied by kind of just like a, I don't know, I guess a switching of things. And I think there's other things out there too that can kind of be, if we just kind of like give it a different perspective or even just like a wording or something, it can I think have a big impact in terms of how people act or how people just let the status quo kind of be, because most people are lazy and will just go with the default.
Yeah. Something that I'm thinking of that is not as directly tied to that, but is same day registration for voting, which isn't exactly that opt-in opt-out system, but like does kind of align with just shaking up the way we've been doing it for so long, and providing another option that does provide like easier access and getting people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to do that. I definitely think there are a lot of more efficient, or maybe efficient's not the right word, but more accessible and equitable ways that we could be running things in this country.
Yeah.
But that's a big burden. What's the word? We're not going to try and solve those things, is what I'm trying to say. Well, we could hypothesize about them, but I think that's a big jump to make.
Yes. Okay, I'm going to put on another song, and we went from Rich Girl by Hall & Oates to a Paul Simon song coming up next.
She's a rich girl, she don't try to hide it. Diamonds on the soles of her shoes. He's a poor boy, empty as a pocket. Empty as a pocket with nothing to lose. Sing ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Ta-na-na, ta-na-na-na. She got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. 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 She's crazy, she got diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Well, that's one way to lose these walking blues. Diamonds on the soles of your shoes. She was physically forgotten, but then she slipped into my pocket with my car keys. She said, "You've taken me for granted because I please you. Wearing these diamonds." And I could say, ooh, as if everybody knows what I'm talking about. As if everybody here would know exactly what I was talking about. I'm talking about diamonds on the soles of her shoes. Thank you.
poor boy changes clothes and he puts on aftershave to compensate for his ordinary shoes. And she said, honey, take me dancing, but they ended up by sleeping in a doorway by the bodegas and the lights on over Broadway, wearing diamonds on the soles of their shoes. And I could say, ooh, ooh, and everybody here would know what I was talking about. I mean, everybody here would know exactly what I was talking about. I'm talking about
Bye.
was He Can Only Hold Her by Amy Winehouse, and before that was Diamonds on the Soles of Her Shoes by Paul Simon. And we're just going to kind of kick it slow for the rest of the, what do we have, about 16 minutes left. So yeah, stay tuned, and next week we'll be back with more Academics on Air. So, and again, please reach out to us via email at academicsonair@gmail.com if you are a student who's interested in sharing an interesting reading, or just, you know, want to, yeah, talk about it. We'd love to hear from you. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, you just heard Smoke on the Water from Deep Purple and a portion of the song Crazy on You from Heart before that. And my deep apologies to all of our listeners. It was my technical error in skipping over a part of that song. So thank you for bearing with us. And we are in the last 4 minutes of the show today. So once again, this is Academics on Air, and you are listening to 91.5 FM WMFO in Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. If you would like to be a guest, please email us at academicsonair@gmail.com. And here we go into the next song. I hope everyone has a great Sunday.
Fades behind a pressure aid, and I'm obsolete.